This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. A record 4.5 million workers quit their jobs in November, while job openings declined to 10.6 million. The phenomenon known as the Great Resignation may be due in part to increased mobility in the labor market as job openings strongly outnumber people looking for work. But what else is behind this mass exodus of employees? Workplace burnout is certainly one factor at play. And how do employers respond? Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss the Great Resignation are Miami University Farmer School of Business Department of Economics Assistant Professor Dr. Peter Nenka. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Fairy Godboss President and Co-Founder Romy Newman. Welcome, Romy.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. And Humu Co-Founder and Head of People Science Dr. Jesse Wisdom. Welcome, Jesse.
Hi, happy to be here.
Thank you. If you want to join our conversation, call 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or send us a tweet. So I want to get right into it. There are 4.5 million people, so many people. Why is this happening? What can any of you, who wants to jump in first? Why are we seeing so many people quit their jobs? Peter, would you like to jump in on that first?
Sure, I'll jump in on it. I took a look at the data, and you know, I do think you hinted at this in your opening. I do think that we really want to distinguish between people who are leaving the labor force altogether and people who are changing jobs. So, in honor of the Bengals, you can think about this as almost being a free agency period for lots of workers, right? Lots of workers are quitting their jobs, but they're quickly getting better jobs. So, you know, I do think from a policy perspective, we need to distinguish between that, which is, you know, unambiguously good for workers, and then the situation where there are some fraction of those workers who are not just quitting, but they're also leaving the labor force entirely. And so that in particular, we've seen an increase in the number of people who have retired early, which is maybe unsurprising given the risk of COVID. And then we've also seen a lot of women who have left the labor force. And you can also imagine that that is COVID related as well.
Romy, do you mind talking a little bit about the impact of this whole thing on women specifically?
Right. I think a few things. First of all, childcare disruption and childcare limitations have forced a lot of women who've not had a choice at all about leaving the work. They had to leave because somebody needed to care for their children, somebody needed to homeschool their children, while schools have been in and out, opened and closed. And also there's been this great resignation has hit the childcare infrastructure. So there's just less available childcare, even when there's open schools. But I would also add, I'm not sure if anyone saw it, the New York Times did a phenomenal series back in December about workers' reactions following the pandemic within the pandemic. And as we look at a moment where we could return to the office, workers are saying, and I know I personally feel this way, I'm not going back to being the last person to pick up my child from childcare. I'm not going back to missing family dinner every night. It's forcing everyone to reevaluate what was being asked of them prior to the pandemic. When we were working in the office, we were working 12-hour days, and what we were giving up to do so. And understanding that more and more workplaces are amenable and sympathetic, there seems to be better, and also more workplaces that are willing to stay hybrid or remote. There are more options out there where people don't have to return to untenable situations that they endured pre-pandemic.
That's great. And we actually have a caller who would like to weigh in on this. Our caller is Dana. Dana, what's your question or comment?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. My name is Dana. I just kind of fall into the category of, I had the fortunate position of being able to work remotely with my prior job. It was with the university. But pandemic opened up more opportunities for remote work, and I decided to move towards a company that was kind of their pivot to allowing remote work. And I found it provided more opportunities. And I felt fortunate for that situation.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much, Dina. I appreciate that perspective. I'm going to put you on hold while we get back to our guests. So is that something that you all are hearing a lot in terms of people finding that they could work remotely and taking advantage of that? I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Jesse.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely something that people are expecting now, and it can be a pretty great competitive advantage for employers to let employees work remotely. I think, you know, if you are in that situation, there are things that you still need to pay attention to, and working remotely can be both good and bad. We did some research prior to the pandemic where we looked at productivity and well-being in relation to work from home days. And what we found was that 1 to 2 days of working from home was kind of the sweet spot for people, where they were able to both feel sort of the connection to their coworkers, as well as feel that ability to have flexibility that they want. Obviously, things have changed and the norms have changed a lot since then. So, you know, that number may change as well, but I think it speaks to sort of the balance needed between personal connection and flexibility.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Dana. We really appreciate it. Have a good day. So getting back to you, Jesse, do you have a feel for the percentage of people in this great resignation that are encompass low-wage workers? I'm thinking of folks in this food service industry, hospitality, even retail, who have, you know, kind of been on the front lines of this pandemic and don't always have paid time off or sick time. Do you have any feel for how low-wage work is playing into this whole thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, obviously people are in very different circumstances when you're in that kind of job versus a different kind of job. As Kate spoke to earlier, right, people in healthcare are really experiencing the brunt of this. So I don't think that it's, you know, the same for everyone. But that being said, I think, you know, it creates opportunities for creating belonging, for understanding and acceptance in ways that we sort of haven't seen before. So it comes down a lot to culture and how employers, whether that be frontline or non-frontline, sort of the culture within the workplace. And what we're seeing in our data and in other data is that employers just making an effort to be empathetic, to understand, to be flexible, to really just be human and show their human side during this and focus on the relationships and the people makes a huge difference. And it really shows, you know, no one is getting this perfect. No one can do everything right, but the intention behind it can go a long way.
Yeah. What about the dollars and cents, Peter? I mean, these are low-wage workers. You know, I've read a lot of stories and heard a lot of interviews, people saying, hey, I just don't want to put my life on the line with this virus for $12 an hour anymore. How much are wages playing a role in this whole thing?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So in the economics literature, we've long had this concept of what's known as a compensating differential. So it's not just the amount of money that you make that matters, but the risks of the job, the other attributes of the job. And historically, there's been very dangerous jobs, you know, things in the mining industry, where you'd have to get paid more in order to take those jobs relative to the general skill level. And so I think what we're going to see is, because of the rise of, you know, remote jobs, more flexible jobs, jobs where you're not interacting with customers all day, if employers where that sort of inflexible kind of interacting with a consumer every day, if they want to hire workers, I think they're going to have to offer a premium above the wages that they otherwise would have, just because their marketplace is becoming more competitive as they look out at their workforce.
Well, and Peter, I also wanted to ask you real quickly. I heard earlier on during the pandemic, when there were so many federal benefits and, you know, added unemployment from the federal government, a lot of employers worrying that workers wouldn't come back because the federal government and these benefits were making it too easy for them to stay out of the workforce. What role do you think some of those things have played in this? And is that kind of a non-issue anymore because of the end of the added unemployment and other benefits?
Yeah, so there's been a number of very interesting studies of these programs. So in general, we would think that, you know, some of these programs, if they were big enough, could have an effect on labor force participation. But because these programs mostly happened when lots of people were out of the workforce for safety reason anyways, it does look like their effect was fairly limited, according to these studies that have looked at, you know, there are differences in the way that states administered the program. Some of them ended earlier, so you can compare across those states. And generally speaking, they found that there was small or no effect. And now most of those have lapsed, and we're still, you know, we had record quits in November. So I think that there is a role for government policy here, but I think it's a pretty minor one.
Yeah. So, Romy, I want to come back to you. Who are your clients right now, and what are they looking for? I guess I'm wondering if you're seeing people who have left their careers and want something completely new that they weren't getting from their previous jobs.
Certainly, it's interesting. I definitely see among the women who use Fairy Godboss that many of them are reevaluating, reassessing, resigning. But I will be honest with you, I see a very interesting and sad phenomenon, which is, despite this data, I see a lot of women who still can't find jobs. I see women who want to be in the workforce, who are qualified, who are capable, and are having a hard time getting placed into the jobs that are filled. And I think, for the most part, to be clear, those are professional jobs, they're office jobs. But I think, especially when women have had lapses in their career, taken breaks for childcare, they're having a hard time getting back in the workforce.
Why do you think that's so specific to women?
Well, I think they're more likely to have exited the workforce or stayed out of the workforce for some time than men, particularly in the wake of the pandemic. But also just historically, I think, you know, because of societal roles, women have been the one to step back and stay out of the workforce for a number of years to take care of children. And I will say, you know, it's societal, but it's also structural, because we know that this country does not have a solid childcare infrastructure, particularly for young children. We know that on average, women make less than men. So in many cases, again, it's not really a choice. It's just it's the only way that a family financial situation makes sense is for a woman to step back and step out of the workforce. Mm.
So, Jesse, what should employers be doing to make their workplaces locations where employees actually want to be, where they don't want to resign?
Yeah, so I don't think it's, you know, any one thing for any one workforce or workplace, but I do think that there are some commonalities that we see across. So belonging and sort of feeling connected are two needs that we've seen consistently come up. I think, you know, leaders and managers can take the time to listen and to understand and try and make those environments inclusive and flexible in ways that they haven't in the past. I think there's ways that we can help managers. So managers are, you know, really bearing the brunt of this in a lot of ways, where they are the face of their organization to the workforce. They're expected to develop their people, to, you know, make sure everything's going right on a typical day. And now they also need to deal with burnout on top of that. And at Humu, we often talk about how, you know, managers are people too, right? Mm-hmm. So even though they're having to deal with all of this, they also have their own lives and their own situations on top of it. And so we do see that they are kind of a lever that's really important in organizational culture and in creating these environments that people want to stay in.
So how important is listening, Jesse, when it comes to, you know, the managers listening to their employees, the big bosses listening to the managers? How important is that in this whole equation?
It's incredibly important. And I think, you know, Kate touched on listening earlier as well. I think, you know, the people on the ground and on the front lines are the ones who know what's going on. They're the ones who are kind of seeing day to day how things are falling apart, how things are going well. And, you know, they have a lot of great ideas, and managers and leaders should listen and also show that they're listening. One of the things that we see is actually very detrimental is to ask for feedback, but then not to respond to it or to act on it, because it shows people that providing their feedback doesn't do anything. It means nothing. So I would say it's incredibly important to listen, but it's almost even more important that if you're going to listen, you then follow up by taking action and show that you really care.
Yeah. And so, Jesse, when you make a workplace more flexible, does that mean there needs to be a combination of remote work and work in the office? What are you seeing on that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of ways to make work more flexible. We do see, you know, a lot about remote work and what's the way to bring people back together. You know, within office environments, no one wants to go back to a commute in order to sit on a Zoom from the office. But at the same time, there are populations that are more likely to want to be in the office. So we see, you know, younger folks who are earlier on in their career often feel like they're missing that mentorship by not being in the office. So I think, you know, flexibility can be different for different people. And part of the challenge of the situation we're in and from the pandemic is how can we do this better and how can we find the right flexibility for people and really understand what they need to be the best employee that they can be.
Yeah. And Peter, are there economic implications for businesses when they're trying to decide how flexible to be?
Yeah, I think certainly there are. So from the perspective of attracting a workforce, you know, especially a diverse workforce, right, which there has been increasing research that shows that matters. I think, you know, by kind of having this flexibility, you put yourself in a much better position to kind of be competitive. And also, like I said before, I think that flexibility is sufficiently valued by employees that it does affect wages in the sense that all things equal, you know, a more attractive job you might be willing to take at a slightly lower wage than one that's very inflexible and you have to work at a higher wage. So to the extent that, you know, you could attract better workers, you actually dollar for dollar are paying them a little bit less, but they're probably going to be happier and more productive. I think that's one way for firms to get a competitive advantage.
Yeah. And Romy, what are your clients looking for when it comes to flexibility? Is that something that is a key factor in what your folks are searching for in a new job?
Well, we recently did a survey, and the number one, I hate to say, the number one thing that the women in our Fairy God Boss community want is to be treated like a human being.
Mm.
Yeah, which I think speaks volumes. But I certainly do believe that flexibility, and that's, I think it's a funny word because flexibility can mean a lot. But I think that either hybrid working or some sort of schedule flexibility is important. I think it's especially important, again, going back to women with young children, because there does tend to be such a profound mismatch between school hours and work hours that makes the juggle always feel difficult. So yes, flexibility in kind of various forms is really important. But so is sort of the heart and soul of the company and how it treats people, making people feel included. And frankly, so, you know, so is the ability to develop and grow. And then also, I think I have to semi-disagree about the trade-off between compensation and flexibility, because I think that what we see often, I think people think that, oh, well, if we want to keep women employees here, we just have to give them flexibility. But I think women want to be paid fairly as well. And I think there are many companies out there that are embracing both workplace or schedule flexibility and still paying people very well. And so that may set a new bar that companies have to match.
Wow. Well, and what about burnout? We have about a minute left, but Romy or Jesse, what are you all seeing in terms of burnout, how it's affecting people, not only in the healthcare industry, but in so many other sectors?
I mean, I can cite a quote from, or a data point from McKinsey and Lean In that 42% of women in their survey feel that they're almost always feeling burnt out. And that was up from, I believe, 35 last year. So it has gotten worse. So I think the sense of burnout is just profound. And I think all the factors that made the spring of 2020 profoundly stressful for women trying to balance career, homeschooling, instability in the school schedule have not gone away or changed. And you've seen, we're all sort of reliving it with this Omicron wave. So I think people are just beaten down and exhausted.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank our guests, Miami University Farmer School of Business Department of Economics Assistant Professor Dr. Peter Nenka, Fairy Godboss President and Co-Founder Romy Newman, and Humu Co-Founder and Head of People Science Dr. Jesse Wisdom. It's been a great discussion. Thank you all so much. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for this show is Selena Reeder. The assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Lucy May.